This is On the T-Box on THP Radio, your number one source for golf equipment news. Here's your host, the Dean of THP.
And there it is. Welcome everyone to THP Radio for another exciting episode of On the T-Box, sponsored by US Kids Golf. I'm your host, Dean, and back to co-host this episode with me is my fellow staff writer, Dan. As always, Dan's review articles can be found on the THP homepage, and he can be reached both on the THP forum as well as on Twitter under the handle @CanadanGolf. Dan, welcome back to THP Radio for another go-around on the T-Box.
Glad to be here as always, Dean.
Yeah, I can't wait to dive in, but before we do that, let's give our listeners an idea of what this show is all about. On the T-Box is a golf podcast that's going to be based on equipment, apparel, accessories, and really anything else interesting that might come across our review desks. Today, we have four topics on our sheet that are just waiting to tee off. Those topics, pretty exciting ones. We have the new Cleveland RTX 3 wedges, the Arcos driver, the Project X hazardous shafts, and something we are looking forward to, what we expect to see from the Mizuno JPX 900 driver. So with that said, it looks like the starter's calling our name, and we are now on the tee box. Cleveland updates their wedges every 2 years. 2 years ago, it was the RTX 2.0, and now they've released an update to that, the RTX 3 wedges. They're coming in both a muscle-back form and a cavity-back form. They've got some interesting technologies into them, and Dan, I know you've had the muscle-back versions in your hands, so if you want, we could start with the technology, and we could just go with the thoughts on them.
I've had the MBs for a couple weeks now, and actually I had some time with the Rotex 2.0s back in the day, something for my game that really didn't jive well for one reason or another. I guess that's the beauty of flexibility nowadays. You know, straight out of the box, into the bag, they were so easy to align with my swing and really just get fantastic feedback off the face. I honestly think one of the main factors in that change is this face balancing technology. Do you know much about that, Dean?
Yeah, the face balancing technology. You know, Cleveland's been known for a long time to have that long hosel shape. It's something that's comforting. If you've played Cleveland wedges for a long time, you know exactly what we're talking about. The hosel really a lot longer than what we've seen on some other wedges. So what they've done with the RTX 3s is they've shortened the hosel a little bit and they've removed, I think it's 9 grams from there, and they've been able to apportion it in the head, reposition it in the head, and help move the sweet spot because they found that the sweet spot on their wedges was a little bit more heel biased. So by moving the weight around, it actually moves the CG a little bit more towards the center. So it should help you get a little more balance in your shot, a little bit more feel in your hands on what you're doing with these shot shapes and flighting the ball and adding spin. And so far in the few swings that I've had with them, I think it works. Now, whether it's just that 9 grams, you know, it's hard to really tell 9 gram difference, but you can definitely look at it and see that the hosel is shorter and these wedges do feel significantly better than the 2.0s in my opinion.
Yeah, it's certainly a different look for Cleveland, but I think what is great about it is it aligns really well with the rest of the marketplace in terms of the length of the hosel. And, you know, Dean, one of the things I love to do in my reviews for THP is focus on hitting the club first and then learning about the technology second. So the first thing I actually did was take it out and start hitting balls with it. And for me, it was the fullness of the contact that I was getting back. It just seemed like they'd done something special to the head to improve either the sound or the quality of the contact. But for me, I'm a guy that misses more on the toe side of center and in many wedges. And it's certainly with that limited forgiveness feature of an MB anything. Certainly when you slide away from the center of the face, you lose a lot of that quality responsiveness. But at least for these, for me, I was feeling just fantastic response. Even when I slid towards that toe side of center location, it was, to me, a very strong change. And actually, another one of the great changes that I noticed, Dean, and maybe you can talk about it as well from what you've seen, is this updated VT sole, which they've brought from their full iron lineup now into their wedge lineup.
Yeah, it's something that we've seen primarily in the Strixon lineup. Strixon and Cleveland owned by the same parent company. So it's not, you know, a big change to see this move all the way over into the Cleveland line, but they added the V-Sole instead of what we've seen with the 1-dot, 2-dot, and 3-dot systems. They still have that, But now the grinds and the bounces are labeled as VLG, that's your low bounce, VMG is your mid bounce, and the VFG, which is a little more of a full sole, that's going to offer you your most bounce out of these wedges. Like I said, again, they still will keep the 1, 2, and 3 dot systems. So if you're looking for that on the store shelves, you will see that. But the V-sole, really, it's going to help get that leading edge down towards the grass. It's going to lower it a little bit, give you a bounce where you need it, right in the middle of the club. And it definitely seems to help when you're trying to open the face, you're trying to hit the bunker shots, really add some versatility to these clubs.
Yeah, especially for those who really drive through the zone, taking a lot of turf. And this is something I've seen with a lot of the new technology nowadays that are being applied to the muscle back designed irons, even into some of the cavity back irons, is they're really cutting away that early contact area into the ground, that leading edge, and softening it and using something in the form of a rolled sole. What I think is so good about VT sole is it kind of centers that into the bottom of the head. So you're not just carving away some of it. You're balancing it to a point where you can actually, and they've done this, manipulate it depending on the kind of interaction that people want, whether it's going to be a lot of it or a little bit of it. And for me, Dean, I think that will certainly show a lot fewer fatted shots and those ugly greenside wedge shots that leave us shaking our head and swinging hard. That laugh that I just heard from you tells me that you've been there just as well as I have.
No, I don't know what you're talking about. I never have. No, you're right, though. And it helps a little bit of the short game, like you say, with the contact. And they've narrowed the sole a little bit, too. So even when you get a full sole wedge, you're not looking at it and saying, wow, look at the monster down there. But it's something that's a little comforting. It definitely helps performance-wise. And, you know, just talking about the turf interaction, when you're playing with wedges and you're worried about manipulating distances or those really short shots next to the green, I mean, it's beneficial. And like, I've only had them in the bag for one round, so I don't have the experience as much as you do with that. But I'm going to take your word for it so that when I go out and play my next round, I'm going to think, well, Dan says this is going to eliminate some of this. And maybe, who knows, I'll knock some tight.
And Dan doesn't lie, for the record.
Dan does not lie. If so, he does, you could call him a liar on Twitter. But I would say you don't have to do that because Dan doesn't lie.
There you go. Hey, Dean, I was also looking at some of the additional technologies that are built into the RTX 3. And what I found was really cool is they have these things called micro grooves, which they've kind of carved into the entire face, which is interesting because obviously as you get closer to that, the high lofted wedge in your bag, you're opening the face up a little bit and manipulating your shot. But what I thought was so interesting is they've focused the angles to be downward for some of the lower lofted wedges and then kind of rolled over for some of the higher lofted wedges so that when you are in fact driving into the ground with that open face, it still kind of aligns. Did you get a chance to kind of check that out and see the grinds or the grooves on the face themselves?
You know, I have seen that, and exactly what you're talking about, you know, in the lower lofts, they face more, you know, up and down. And on the higher lofts, you know, all the way up to the 64 degree, which I can't even fathom hitting that, you know, they go aside. But when you think about it, it makes perfect sense because when you open that face wedge, you're really changing the angle of the grooves. So by doing the micro grooves like that, it was something that, you know, when I first saw, I was like, I don't know, does that make a lot of sense? But then once you lay a wedge down, you open the face, you're like, oh, there it is. It's really a good idea for them. I like that they did that.
It's one of those ideas that just kind of hits you in the face and you just nod your head and accept that there are people out there who just know way more than you do doing the right things. And obviously that's a good example here from Cleveland.
Yeah, it really is. You know, it's while this is strictly on the Cleveland wedge, we saw wedges come out last year that had grooves that go all the way out to the toe and have the high toe. Well, why would you put it there? Then you hit a few shots and you're like, oh, look, the contact is right there on those grooves. So these wedge manufacturers certainly know what they're doing, and they put a lot of care into these wedges because they know they're going to be used for a lot of different shots. And not only did they offer these in just the muscle back version, which you and I have just talked about, but they did have a cavity back version as well. They have multiple finishes for the muscle back version, only one finish for the cavity back. They do have a graphite shaft as well for anybody who plays graphite iron shafts and doesn't want to go to steel in their wedges. They do offer that. But these things, they come out in September, And if you get a chance to go out there and get fit for them and take some swings with them, I really think people are going to like what Cleveland has done with these. And with that, let's move on to topic two. We're going to be talking about, you know, people like to analyze their game and know the stats, and it could really be beneficial to a golfer's development. Arcos has been out for some time now. You know, they've offered a full package where you could put the 13 or 14 sensors on your clubs and go ahead and review your entire round. They've come out with a new one, and this one focuses strictly on everyone's favorite club, the driver. Dan, you've spent time with this. I know you wrote a review, which is up on our THP homepage, about the Arcos driver. So tell us a little bit about it and your experiences.
Yeah, Arcos has come out with a really interesting product, and it obviously is purely focused on the driver, and based on everything that I read and the time that I spent with it, this is genuinely a product where you can go and see how you're doing in terms of the off the tee game, but also how you're doing against other people. It is truly one of those items that you can go to your friends and say, hey, look, I've got this device. I want you to go buy it too. And even though we're, you know, different states or different countries away, we can go head to head and see who's the top dog, if you will. So Dean, I know you're out in New York and I'm over here in Ohio. Maybe you should get one of these and we can really go head to head here.
If we do that, can I manipulate the stats so it looks like I'm hitting it, you know, extremely far and not, you know, the normal distance that I do hit it? Because for anybody who doesn't know, Dan hits the ball. We've played together. He's easily 45 yards longer than me just on carry distance alone. That might even be generous with the 45 yards. Yeah, it's probably more like 65. So nah. If we did this, it would kind of make me feel bad. But I do like the idea of the competition. We could do that. It would be like kind of practicing or playing along with each other, even though you're in Ohio and I'm in New York.
And that's the beauty of it. But it's funny that you threw a little sarcasm in there with the changes. You actually can change on the fly, which I think is one of the best elements of the device itself. It is all automated so that you, when you pull the club out of the bag, when you start taking swings with it, it acknowledges the fact that you're about to hit a drive. You don't have to click anything. You don't have to do anything. But then when you take your walk down the fairway, you get to your ball, you know, set your bag up, you hit your shot, it actually has an understanding of where you're stopping to hit your ball, and then you can actually change it. And, you know, maybe one of your playing partners has lost his way on the right side and you had to help him, and every once in a while it misses a little bit. Well, in this case, you can actually change the location to the correct spot where your driver landed and actually modify it then or later, which I think is fantastic.
Yeah, I think that's a good idea too, because, you know, we've seen with these kind of devices, you know, like you said, you go to see your partner's ball or you help somebody else look for it, and it kind of can mess up the system. You know, you look back at your round and you're like, well, I didn't really go over there. I hit it from the middle of the fairway, not 35 yards right with Dean, where he was. So, you know, that is pretty cool. You can do it right on the fly, like you said, or post round. These devices, man, they've come a long way since they first got introduced. My interest level in them keeps growing by the day. I'm not really a huge stats guy, but I get the feeling that if I had something like this, I really could help analyze my game, see where I'm losing strokes. And unfortunately with this one, it would really point out to me that I need help with some driver distance and accuracy.
And that is another big component of the product itself, is while you do have leaderboards that you can choose to play against other people or against a global network of golfers, you're very much playing against yourself. And there are certainly established numbers, and it suggests to you each round you go out, there's a goal you want to hit, like, you know, bomb a drive or hit numerous fairways or do all these things. These are all elements you can take back. You can compete with yourself or with other people, and that's entirely up to you. But let me tell you what I love the most about it, Dean.
Yeah.
Is that it actually has, you connect with your smartphone, and what it does is it gives you a whole layover, which I think is fantastic, because on my home course, and I'm sure you've seen this as well, there are lots of holes where you have to pick a line. You can't see the end point. And, you know, you did mention that I hit the ball a decent way. I've been called kind of long, which I guess is internet long for some of those people. But, you know, on my course, there are a couple corners that I love to take, especially when I've just made a double bogey. It's the ninth hole. I'm geared up for another double or maybe a chance at eagle. So I'm hitting blind shots over there to locations I can't really see. So what I'm doing is I'm picking a spot maybe over one tree or over something, but then what I get to do on this device based on where I've landed is I get to see just how much more I can take of that corner the next time I go out there. And I think that's a part of strategizing just as much as anything else.
Yeah, you know, like you say, the strategy. And now, Dan, if you do that, if you're looking at the whole overlay, if you're in the app mid-round, can you see your stats for that day? Does it allow you to see, you know, what your average driving distance is that day?
Yeah, you definitely can. You can actually modify it while you're at it as well. So you can change it to show the numbers from the tee before you've hit, after the tee. There's a whole lot of application you can create while you're actually playing golf. So it's very, very interactive.
Yeah, that's good because, you know, when you were saying looking at the whole overview and trying to take on corners, if in my mind, if I could see that, all right, well, normally I drive the ball 230 yards and today I'm hitting it well. You know, I'm averaging, let's just say 245. You know, if I have that overlay of the hole, I could probably see where 245 puts me in a little better position to where I would normally hit it down in like the 230 range. So I would think that if you had that, it could definitely help the way you strategize going into the round or even mid round to know that if you're hitting the ball farther or not hitting it as well on that specific day, plan your way and plot your way around the golf course if that is your kind of thing.
Yeah, it acts as a pretty solid GPS unit, highly interactive. And I think what's great about the unit, what I experienced was that you can kind of make it your own. So if I put it on someone else's club and had them download the app, I think they could utilize it in a totally different way, which I think is good. I think that freedom is great.
Yeah, I think that's really good. And, you know, if I'm right, the regional Arcos, the whole system is, I think, around $200. This is around $80. Is there a subscription that has to go along with this, or is this one just standalone $80 and you're good to go?
You know, there is a small subscription fee that adds some additional features. Golfers can certainly go and take a look at Arcos, see exactly what you can get. I'm sorry I don't have a list on me, but there are some unlockable elements that will certainly only add to that understanding of what you're doing off the tee.
You know, it sounds like a pretty good device for $80 if you're somebody who likes stats and likes to compete, whether it's against yourself or a friend, you know, in another state with, you know, the driving distance. This could be something for you. You know, as we get ready to take the turn, I'd like to remind listeners that they can join in on the conversation from this episode and many other conversations with thousands of golfers every single day on the THP forum. You can also follow, comment, or pose questions to Dan and myself on Twitter by sending a tweet to either at CanadaAndGolf or at Dean of THP while using the hashtag THP Radio. Who knows, maybe your question, your comment, or whatever you want to talk about might end up in a future episode of On the Tee Box. Hey, Dan, you and I, you know, we're kind of lucky. We get the opportunity to test out a lot of golf equipment. But when it comes time to build your bag for a tournament or just to go out and play, you like to play equipment that's fit for your game, right?
I love to.
Well, the same goes for kids. And with US Kids Golf, any parent can pick up a properly fit set of clubs for their child. US Kids fits by height, and they can start to find the perfect set of clubs for your child as young as 4 years old. But you know, it doesn't just stop with clubs because golf never does. US Kids also has a variety of apparel and golf gloves as well. For more information on their products, you can head on over to uskidsgolf.com. Maybe get your kid properly fit. Dan, now something similar to the driver, we just talked about Arcos, we're going to talk about shafts. And this shaft might be the hottest golf shaft out there right now. It's made by Project X. It's their Hazardous line. It's offered in three different variants currently, the black, the yellow, and the red. I've had the black in the bag for a few weeks now, and I know you've had some experiences with both the black and, I believe, the yellow.
I'm going to have to cover my mic up with a little bit of, I don't know, a towel or something, because every time I see this shaft, I just start to drool. I've always been a high spin guy. I don't know what it is, just part of my swing. And every year I seek that new beautiful technology that just makes a huge difference in my game. And what I've landed on is Hazardous. That it's as simple as that. I started with the black. I read a little bit about it. It's for high swing speeds. It's for real powerful guys. And then they actually released this yellow. And Dean, if they make 200 yellows and I could buy 200 of them, I probably would. the designation is, it's intended for smoother transitions, which I believe I do have. My numbers are a little bit more optimal with it, and I'm getting that mid-launch that I've so desperately wanted for the longest time.
And the yellow is more of a back weighted shaft, you know, as opposed to the black, which is just, you know, the straight regular weighted shaft. But this one's a little more back weighted to help get you maybe just a little bit more club head speed. I know that's not something that you seek, but, you know, most of us do.
Yeah, it's an interesting design, and I think, like some of these back-weighted shafts we're seeing, it's allowing players to go a little bit lighter without having that presentation of swinging a very light shaft. I think when you add that additional weight at the top, it really makes a difference. And I think this is a nice change or modification from Project X from a previous shaft they had originally called LZ, I think. Mm-hmm. I love the concept, softer middle, real stiff in the button tip section, which meant that I could swing it without feeling like I was swinging a rebar, which I've done before. Like I said, I've got problems. But yeah, I can't say enough good things about yellow. Give me some ideas of what you're seeing with the black.
Yeah, you know, just going off really quick what you said with the LZ with soft in the middle, the black is completely different than that. You know, it's really stable in that midsection. It's definitely built for more guys with more aggressive tempos and swing speeds. I'm not sure I necessarily fall into that category, but I'm like you. I spin the ball a lot, mostly because of my swing faults, not because of my swing speed. But what I'm seeing with it right now is I'm playing in a 6.0. That's what I played in the previous Project X shafts. I think in a perfect world, I would have to drop a flex for it. It just feels a little, I'm going to say stiff. It just feels a little stiffer for me, a little more stout than what I remember the 6.0 feeling in the previous Project X line. However, ball flight is pretty good. Like I said, distance probably not optimal because the flex is a little bit too much for me. But everything has been fairly consistent as far as directional misses. You know, everything's kind of been straight and just off the fairway, knock on wood. I haven't had anything that's going way right or anything way left. It's a really stable feeling shaft. Like I said, for me, I think I probably just need to drop half a flex on it.
So would you say that this is a true low launch shaft for you, Dean, or are you looking at something a little bit different?
Well, if anybody knows my game, I off the driver, I launch everything high. But again, swing faults. But yeah, I would say this is comparable to a lot of the other true low launch shafts that we've seen in the past. And that's really good. And anybody who wants to have a little bit more launch, they have the other options out there. The Hazardous Red will definitely launch a little bit higher than the Hazardous Black. So if people need more spin or they need more launch, Project X does have a shaft within the Hazardous family that could suit their game.
Now, Dean, I don't really know anything about it, but I've seen, and maybe you do, I'm just throwing this out there because I'm very curious. I've seen a silver looking shaft that says Hazardous on it, and it's got a kind of an outline green name.
Yes.
I hope you know something about it because I'm super eager after hitting the yellow and the black.
I believe that one is the T100. I don't think that one is out on market yet. I don't know when it's coming to market. You know, if anybody has questions on it, they could you know, either throw us in on a tweet, or you can send a tweet to True Temper or Project X. They'll definitely be able to answer that one for you. I know they, when we were out there last week, Don Brown was talking about the material, and the material used in that shaft particularly, I believe he said, was the stiffest and the strongest material that they have. And a lot of people talk when they think about material, you know, stiff and strong, they think is the same thing, but it's really not. You know, stiffness is all about, obviously, that one's pretty self-explanatory. You know, the stiffer the material, the less flex there's going to be. The strength is just how strong and how durable that material is. So the material they're using in the one that we're talking about here is the cream of the crop as far as stiffness and strength. Like I said, I don't know when that one is coming to market. The graphics on it are killer. They are perfect for the Hacker's Paradise colors as well. But we'll see. Hopefully that one comes to market soon.
And you caught me with a little bit of motivation there, the beautiful THP green.
Yeah, it is. It's a nice looking shaft. All of their shafts are good looking combos within this line. You know, that one in particular really does hit home with the colors. And when it comes out, I'm sure we'll see a lot more on it, not only on the interwebs, but on Hacker's Paradise homepage.
Yeah, and I think the only thing that really caught my eye is the conversation they've been having about how popular these shafts are on tour right now. And certainly the black and the yellow is most common, and I believe the red was just recently released, but this T100 has popped up a couple times. What do you think, Dean, about seeing these yellow shafts in play on Sundays in the hunt as compared to maybe any other shaft in the way it's been released in the past.
It's really interesting how a shaft, I was thinking about this today, how a shaft really gains their popularity. You know, it wasn't too long ago that the Rogue Shaft was really it, the hot shaft. It's what people wanted. You know, and before that, we always said we had the Tiger Shaft, graphite design, mm-hmm. was it the Tour ADDI? Everybody wanted that one. That one, you know, was for Tiger Woods, obviously, the Tiger Shaft. And then the Rogue, you know, Jordan Spieth, and you saw it in a lot of other players' bags. And the Hazardous, we're seeing that pop up on tour now, does well on Sunday. You know, usually the thought is it's going to do well in the cash register. And with Shaft, the Shafts is kind of different because, you know, they're playing a game that's completely different than ours. So to look at somebody on TV or to watch the Olympic golf and say, Patrick Reed's playing this Shaft, hey, I should play that Shaft too. It kind of doesn't work. It doesn't compute in my mind, at least, because Patrick Reed and I play completely different games. But, you know, with flexes and everything like that, you know, Patrick Reed could be playing a, you know, a shaft in 7.0 and I could play it in a 5.0 and say I'm playing the same shaft he is with the same materials. And that is 100% true. That's one of the good things about shafts. It's just very interesting in how the Hazardous really took off. I think part of it is the name. The other part of it is the logo. Project X a few years ago coming out with the whole handcrafted idea and stamping the shafts. Brilliant marketing. And that's really just caught every golfer off guard and really want them to get that in the bag.
Oh yeah. I love the idea of handcrafted as a word. I look at it the same way as proto or tour. But what I think I like the most about it is the idea that it's built here by us in the US and we're able to kind of have that confidence that they're going to put something phenomenal in the bag if I have that stamp on it. And to me, that's what that represents.
Yeah, absolutely. And just going off that, before we move on to the final topic, you know, I want to point out that recently we did have 7 THP forum members take a trip out to San Diego for what we called the handcrafted experience with Project X. You know, there they got to custom build their own shaft from selecting and rolling the materials itself all the way down to the artwork. And, you know, anyone who wants to learn more about the shafts or just relive what these 7 THPers went through, you know, they could go on the Hackers Paradise forum. Look for the handcrafted experience. There's a wealth of knowledge, a ton of information in there, and some pretty good pictures of all the shafts that we've talked about, and some educational on how guys rolled the shafts, the difference in materials. It's going to be a fantastic read if you take the time to do it. Okay, Dan, final topic of the day. You know, we expect Mizuno to release the JPX 900 driver in the very near future. We've seen the picture of the sole from the USGA website. It certainly looks interesting. Between the two of us, we've reviewed Mizuno's last two driver offerings, and both times we came away impressed. So let's spend a couple minutes talking about what we see here and perhaps what we'd like to see when it becomes available with its official release.
Yeah, that sounds good. And I'm looking at a picture, a black and white picture of it right now. And all I can think about, Dean, was how good the 850 sounded. I loved the contact noise. I loved that sensation off the face. And for me, quite frankly, it was straight. It was kind of a bomber. So I'm curious to know what they've done to change it. I do see, maybe you can put some thoughts into this. I do see there are two weights that can be applied to it, and you can certainly move it around the face. What do you think about that tech?
Yeah, it looks like, you know, they still have some of the quick switch technology, you know, the different ports. They definitely have a weight port for fade and one for draw as well. And, you know, keeping one in the middle, which we had in the last JPX driver. The thing to me that's really interesting is on the bottom, you know, they have a weight where we've seen some companies do like the Smart Sole idea, and it's open, neutral, and closed. So I'm very interested to see how that weight in that picture, because I know you're staring at the same one I am, how that weight is going to affect the face angle of the club, or if you have to put it there to counter the face angle of the club, you know, from the adjustable hosel. It really does look interesting, the bottom. I'm not sure all the machinations and combinations that are going to come out of it, but I'm sure it's going to be a driver that can certainly be finely tuned.
Yeah, I'm a neutral guy. I enjoy clubs that start neutral and I can adjust from there. What I find interesting about that is the positioning of the weight goes backwards and forwards, which defines whether it's going to be open versus neutral versus closed. And I think, Dean, it seems like a pretty foreign concept to me. I know we have a lot of adapters that adjust it, and certainly changing the loft has marginal changes to the way the face drives into the zone. But now we're talking about altering weight and that changing the location of, or the angle of the face coming through the zone. It makes me wonder if we move some of these weights from the middle into a fade or a draw setting, just how much of an impact that's going to have.
Yeah, it's an interesting one. I know some people, when we put the photo up on the THP forum, you know, the word transformer was used a few times. And while that might be, you know, maybe not the nicest thing to say, it's kind of true in a way that this driver looks like you can really transform it into whatever you want. You can move the weights to have a higher ball flight or lower ball flight. You could do the fade and the draw. You could open and close the face. And judging by the hosel, you'll be able to pick the loft you want too. So it really is going to be a head that, like we've said, can be finely tuned for your game. The problem I see with something like this is how many people, and myself is included, are going to get this. They're going to get it, you know, in a good setting for themselves, have a bad day, and then go back out and readjust and retinker. And then all of a sudden, maybe you lose it. You lose confidence in the club, and, you know, there goes the club. It's out of your bag. And I don't think that's a good thing for Mizuno, because, you know, their drivers really the last few years have been really good. EZ had really simple movable weight technology, and being able to put the weight in the back or in the heel and the toe, as well as changing the loft, and it performed very well. It was a little more, they said low spin, it was kind of a low mid spin driver head. I expect this one to be a lot lower than that one. This one's probably going to be like the one that you reviewed a couple of years ago in terms of spin and performance. And who knows, hopefully that blue crown that you and I both enjoy. But there's just a lot of things going on the bottom.
Yeah, you certainly caught me in the love of blue crowns. But I think it's a very good thing for Mizuno. It's notable when it's blue, you know, it's blue, and you know, Mizuno is blue. So for that, I think it's a great decision. I think continuing on in something like that, rather than altering to what we've seen a lot of companies do, is go to the matte finish, a matte dark gray or black. I don't think personally, well, it's not my company, so it's not really up to me, but I don't personally want to see them change away from that blue. I think that was certainly a highlight for me.
Yeah, no, I hope they stick with the blue. I know with the EZ driver, it was more of a gray finish, but it was gray with blue accents, and, you know, it looked really, really good. I like the blue crown. We'll have to see if the durability is there, because I know with the last time they came out with the blue crowns, we had some paint chip problems.
Well, I did personally review the 850 myself. I gamed it for well over probably a couple months, and I never personally had that experience. I think there was some conversation about the woods and certainly having a lot more turf interaction. But I think, at least on the driver's side, there's a little bit more consistency, which I would imagine they'll bring through on the 900 line as well.
Yeah, I'm really looking forward to see what it comes. Like I said, the picture is interesting. It looks like it's something that could really be finely tuned for one's game. And I can't wait to get one in and see really what we can do with it.
Yeah, I'm excited to set it to that fade bias and see what happens.
Well, maybe for you. I'll put it on the draw spin. All right, well, that's a wrap. Big thank you for Dan for co-hosting today. Remember, you can join us both on the THP forum to discuss and debate everything we talk about here. And of course, follow along on Twitter at Dean of THP and at Canadan Golf. Don't forget to head over to iTunes or Google Play so you can subscribe to the Hacker's Paradise. That way you'll never miss a new episode of the Golf Industry Uncut, The Dean Has Spoken, or our show on the T-Box. While you're at it, take a minute and leave your feedback on the variety of shows that we have to offer. We really like to hear what you have to say. For myself and Dan, we hope you enjoyed this episode, and we look forward to meeting you again on the T-Box.
THP Radio on the Hacker's Paradise Podcast Network, your number one source for all things golf. Subscribe on iTunes to never miss an episode.